And this is a special edition of Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and I'm joined in studio by 90.5 WESA's senior news editor, Mark Neutbar. We have just heard live coverage of Governor Wolf's budget address, an eagerly anticipated address, and the governor came out swinging. He outlined his plans in a very bold way. He said that Pennsylvania stands at a crossroads, that we have a $2.3 billion deficit, an education crisis, and a sluggish economy. He mentioned the credit rating for the state of Pennsylvania being downgraded five times in a row, making us one of the least creditworthy states in the nation. And he mentioned that Pennsylvania, since the beginning of 2011, has been near the bottom in the country in job creation. So he laid out his plans to combat in all of those arenas. And we are joined now for reaction to what the governor had to say by Eric Montardi with the Allegheny Institute for Public Policy. He is with us by phone. Eric, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Oh, thanks for having me.
And also with us, someone who we imagine, after hearing what we just heard, is somewhat of a happy camper today, John Callahan. He is Senior Director of Government Affairs for the Pennsylvania School Board Association. John Callahan, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Pleasure to be on.
We'll be discussing what the governor had to say, getting reaction from these two gentlemen, along with Mark Neutbar here for the next half hour, taking you up to 1 o'clock and here and now. And first, let's just start by getting the general reactions from each of you to what the government had to say. Let's start with Eric Montardi. You had a chance to hear the governor's speech. As you parse through it, what is your feeling about the things that he is proposing?
There's no real surprises. I mean, everything that was laid out has kind of been mentioned. I mean, I'm interested to probably delve into the specifics of this tax shift. I mean, that's been a topic that's been, you know, bandied about in Pennsylvania for a long time, about how you reduce the impact of school property taxes. And I'm not really sure, because there were two statements that were made in the address. One seemed to be that it would be targeted toward homeowners, and then later the governor said something about businesses would be enticed to locate in areas because property taxes have been reduced. So I'm not sure if that means that it's an across-the-board cut or reduction for everybody, or if it's just, you know, a targeted homeowner reduction.
Go ahead, Mark.
I was just going to say it seems as though that's about a reduction across the board. That's the way it's looking at this time.
Right. He laid out some pretty ambitious plans for education and basically these tax adjustments, and also the tax on shale is something that is going to, in the governor's view, provide money to pay for what he outlined, particularly enormous increases in education funding, and, or I guess substantial would be a better word. Let's get some reaction from Mr. Callahan, John Callahan from the Pennsylvania School Board Association. Tom Wolf said that we need a historic commitment to education, and we're making it today. As far as you're concerned, based on what you heard, did the governor, in fact, make that commitment, make good on his campaign promises?
Obviously, John, I got to tell you, he made a commitment today that, we were all kind of expecting it, but we weren't sure about how much and what exactly this all entails. And we're still trying to figure that out. I mean, it's $1 billion for the next year, it looks like, and then, you know, $2 billion to $3 billion after that. You know, that's a substantial amount of investment in education. Of course, it's all a matter of also how you drive those dollars out at the end of the day. So when he talks about a formula, that is key. Actually, you just can't talk about the funding. You got to talk about three things. You got to talk about the funding. You got to talk about how you're going to drive out the funding. And then for us, very important, is how are you going to provide school districts with the ability to save dollars from pensions and also save dollars from how they have to do business in the state, too. So he kind of touched on all three of those areas. There's a lot more details that have to be found out about how it's all going to be done. But very interesting, and I think he he kept his promise and he kept to it.
Well, you're certainly there are those who would agree with you based on some of the talk that we heard from Terry Madonna that in a lot of ways the speech was short on specifics. But one of the things that the governor did emphasize very strongly was that the state had to come up with a funding formula, that it's something that has been lacking. As far as you're concerned, when you heard what he had to say in general terms about the funding formula, what was your reaction to that?
Yeah, let me kind of start back with some of the basics there for some of the listeners. We haven't really had a funding formula. That's a way to get out dollars to school districts from the state that's been fair or predictable or even had a formula at this stage. And that's really what the education community has kind of been asking for, is saying let's create something that's predictable. That's something that allows school districts from year to year to predict and figure out their budgets, and something that the public in general can understand and can see that it's fair, and doesn't see that more money went to this district over that district and it's all politics. In this case, they could say it's all driven by a formula. Wolf's formula was a little scant on details, but he did mention some very important factors that I think my association and all my members would say matter, which is counting kids first, which sounds very basic, but we should count kids. And then looking at some other factors out there, like English language learners, poverty factors, and even driving out dollars for how much education costs in certain areas. So he, I think, touched upon those areas. I think we're looking for more details. But it sounds like he's going along that same line, which is good. But I'll also say that the Basic Education Funding Commission that's going on right now has a lot of work. And, we're excited about the work that they're going to do. It's a bipartisan commission. I think the governor also recognizes he's excited about it. So we're all waiting on that work to be done. And once that's wrapped up, I think we're going to have a plan that we can really march ahead with. So we're excited. I mean, and Wolf is, I think, doing the right thing by putting some of his markers out there. But it all comes down to that Basic Education Funding Commission and what they're going to propose, I think, at the end of the day.
Hey, John, this is Mark Newtbar from the newsroom. You did mention district size and poverty and student makeup, but also in the governor's address here today when he was talking about funding formula, he talked about incentivizing improvement and cost controls. Are those the types of things that you think should be in a funding formula?
Yeah, that's interesting. We really haven't talked about that. I think from our member standpoint, we'd look at that and say, okay, how are you going to do that? That's going to be very difficult. And whenever somebody says you have to incentivize improvement in schools, I think that's laudable. The problem is we run into mandates from the state and from the feds that say you have to do things in a certain way. So our ability to be innovative in many cases is kind of hampered by, in many cases, by the law itself. So I actually would look for a reform that said, if you find a mandate that you can reduce costs if you get around that mandate and provide a better education to kids, then you can have the flexi to be around that mandate, a mandate waiver in essence. So I would look for that kind of reform. Give us some ability to be flexible. And I believe that school districts would have a better ability to provide savings to the taxpayers.
And sticking with education as the topic here, Governor Wolf's budget expands access to early childhood education by increasing the number of children in pre-K by 75%. Pretty substantial number there.
Yeah, and an absolutely incredible number. I mean, look, we all know the stats on pre-K that it relieves all kinds of different issues as you go forward, from social issues to welfare issues. So an investment in pre-K is really an investment in so many other different reductions in cost in the future. So, I mean, that's pretty impressive. Again, the only thing that I question at the end of this is, we've got the $1 billion that we're thinking from Marcellus, and we've got all these tax shifts. It all comes down to, I guess, Jay Corman was on after the budget here, saying, where are we going to get all these dollars and make it all happen? That's all have to happen. That has to happen in the next 6 months or the, or I guess we'll be here till October or so. I don't know, trying to figure out that question.
John, can you give us a 30-second primer on how the timeline works for school districts to put together their budgets? Because you're always looking to Harrisburg before you can really set your numbers in place. So how does this play out for you guys?
Yeah, I mean, when you're, we look now, but I'll tell you what, a lot of the school districts are already, according to the timeline, already have to have their first budget prepped and ready and proposed to the public. So your school district already has these numbers and already has even guessed how much they're going to get next year. Already at this stage. And when the governor comes out with his, that adds a little bit more information. But at the same time, we pass budgets well before the June deadline and are based on guesses, actually, on how much you're going to receive the next year. And I think that's what comes down when we're pushing for a funding formula. That's one of the biggest reasons, is because we want to have something that's predictable, that you're going to be able to say, because we know this formula provides us this much, we expect that we're going to get X dollars. We can build our budget off of that. And it's rare that a school district actually opens up their budget at the end of the day after the June timeline. So, you know, we're planning budgets in the dark right now. And I think the funding formula, which Wolf recognizes we need, and I think the legislature recognizes we need, is a key part to that. And it's a key part to so many other issues as well. I mean, when you're talking property tax relief and other tax changes, it's a key part to actually funding education right and getting the dollars there so that you can do these other initiatives.
And Pennsylvania, one of only three states that does not use a funding formula to distribute education dollars to local districts. The governor not only talked about restoring 50% of the cuts, and there's a debate about whether money was cut during the Corbett administration from education, whether it was actually cuts or money that went away. But the governor not only said he's restoring part of those, but also proposing to increase the state's share of funding for public education to 50%. And, you know, we'll get to the method of paying for that and get the Eric's response to some of the means for doing that the governor came up with. But as far as that commitment, were you expecting that kind of funding figure for public education coming from the state in this address?
Yeah, I don't think we were expecting the 50%, to be honest. but I got to tell you, there's two things in public education that the government has paid, you know, has promised that 50% number. One is for special education from the feds. When they first passed the special education laws, they said, we'll give you 50%. And now that number is down towards the 20 to 10% level. And then on the state level, when they first did the shift from sales tax, this is way back in history, they said, okay, we're going to make sure we provide, you know, do our share of education funding, we'll try to meet the 50% goal. And it's always been kind of talked about, but never really met at the end of the day. And I think right now we're around the 30% number. So that would be more than significant. And again, I guess when you can say, when you do that, it leads to other changes on the local level. When you're talking about property tax issues, you know, if you get more money from the state and you're able to have that 50-50 partnership with the state, then you have a lot more ease of property tax issues as well. And you're able to invest in education properly. So I was kind of stunned by it, but it's a lofty goal. It's a very lofty goal. Fully supported, obviously, but my goodness, that is a very tall order for Pennsylvania.
So now comes the question of how does the governor pay for this increase in education, among other things? And Eric Montardi from the Allegheny Institute for Public Policy, the governor, Governor Wolf, is proposing a 5% severance tax for the shale gas industry that he projects will generate the income that will help make these spending increases possible. And I don't think anybody is surprised. I think we all saw this coming. There were indications that this was what the governor was going to do. Now that he's articulated this, what about your thoughts as a means for paying for things like education and other state government services?
Well, I mean, obviously, it's moving, you know, the pool revenues where, you know, from where it has been, which is basically an impact fee that funds, you know, a variety of state agencies and then goes on a formula basis to counties and municipalities where there, you know, first is drilling activity, and then secondly, where there's no drilling activity, then they get a share of the money. So basically, from, you know, my understanding of what the governor proposes, that yes, there will be no impact fee on paper, but that money will be kept in place. I don't know if that means in the perpetuity or, you know, what happens if you have a county that, you know, does have more drilling activity. Do they then get a greater share from that pot of money? And then everything left over then goes to, you know, education. So the, you know, the location of the, you know, the proceeds move from, you know, driving it locally to, you know, to Harrisburg and then to be distributed. And again, as, you know, Mr. Callahan pointed out, I mean, it is an incredibly complex issue because you do have this basic funding commission that's been meeting since last June. They're supposed to, you know, put forth a proposal, I believe this coming June, which would be, you know, right around the start of the fiscal year where they're actually supposed to come out with, you know, proposal for a formula. And, you know, just at the, again, is at the very practical level is if we, as we've looked at, I mean, you know, with 43 school districts in Allegheny County, you have somewhere they're generating 90% of their per pupil funding from property taxes and from other local taxes. And then you have districts on the other end of the spectrum that get most of their money from the state. So, I mean, the question then becomes if we're going to set a 50% goal, does that mean that the districts that are getting more than 50% currently take a cut? How is it perceived when you have very wealthy districts that are just able to generate a lot of money with not a lot of local tax effort, then get a big bump from the state in order to get them to 50%? And how does it stay there? Because do you then tell the school districts, well, in order to keep this 50-50 formula, we prohibit you from raising any of your local taxes going into the future because, you know, it's not going to take a lot for a district like a Quaker Valley or an Upper Marion to say, well, we just want to increase our millage a half mil, and that's going to generate a lot of money that we can put into our public schools, and now our ratio is 55-45 local state or 60-40. So I'm not sure how that, you know, again, how that comes about. And, of course, I mean, we're talking about a 40-minute budget address, so you're not going to get every single detail. But those are some of the issues that, you know, we've been analyzing and looking at as, you know, how this comes down to, you know, reworking the formula and then keeping it in place where you say that the state's going to be funding 50% of education and what that means at the, you know, at the district level where you have, you know, wildly disparaged districts where, you know, some of them are, you know, well above 50% and some of them are well below 50%.
It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA, a special edition of the program following live coverage of Governor Wolf's first budget address, an eagerly anticipated address in which he outlined a number of his funding priorities and, in a general sense, talked about how he intends to pay for them. And, of course, this will be submitted to a process of intense debate with the legislature over the next few months before a budget is arrived at on June 30th. We're talking with Eric Montardi with the Allegheny Institute for Public Policy. Also joining us, John Callahan, Senior Director of Government Affairs for the Pennsylvania School Board Association. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and with me in studio, 90.5 WESA Senior News Editor Mark Newtbar.
And Eric, there were some very specific numbers in here. I'd like to start with the first one, get your reaction to sure. The sales tax moving from 6 to 6.6%. And I understand it would make sense that then in Allegheny County it would also go up from 7 to 7.6%.
Right. And then in Philadelphia it would go to 8.6.
Right. So what's your take on that from your organization?
Well, you know, they're broadening the base a little bit. And again, if we're going to have a tax shift, meaning we want to reduce some tax or eradicate some tax, then you have to pay for it another way if it's not going to come through spending cuts. So we've known, you know, there's been proposals, like I said, over the years. I am a little bit surprised about the sales tax because that was not something that came up. I mean, obviously, there was a lot of talk about the personal income tax. And, you know, there's been proposals, of course, about extending it to almost everything, but it seems like the governor's not wanting to do food and clothing and pharmaceuticals, because basically if you wanted to get rid of school property taxes, meaning for the homeowner, for the business, for landowners, for, everybody, it basically amounts to an $11 billion shift. And when the state ran these numbers a few years ago, they said, look, here's what we would have to do is the personal income tax rate would have to go from 3.7 to 4.34. The sales tax would go from 6% to 7%, but the base of that sales tax would have to significantly broaden. So, what we're talking about here is somewhere in the middle ground, because I think, as you mentioned, Mark, you said that the property tax reduction proposal would be for all classes of property taxpayers. Is that correct?
That's my understanding at this time.
Okay, so that means that they're going to generate a pot of money in Harrisburg, and then if it's going to cut the school property taxes for everybody, that means that they're going to return the money to the districts dollar for dollar and tell them they have to lower their millage rates, because if it was just for homeowners, they would do what they currently do with the gaming money, which is they get a pot of money from the gaming tax, they keep it in Harrisburg, they have homesteads apply to their counties for relief. They drive the money back by formula, and then they take the number of homestead and says, okay, here's how much you would get back. We lower the value, the taxable value of your home. So obviously, this is sort of like a middle ground, but I think the fear will be when people start to look at this is a lot of people, and again, I'm not speaking for everybody, but a lot of people want the property tax gone. The fear is that even if you have a reduction, that at some point, there's going to be nothing that prevents school districts from raising the rate back up, and then it eats away what you've paid, and if you're subject to the sales tax and the personal income tax increases. So there's a little bit of fear there. But yeah, I mean that was a bit surprising to hear the sales tax proposal. But I mean we've known for a long time that if you're going to do a pretty significant shift in taxes where you're trading out something at the state level for the local property taxes, that you might have to do a combination of personal income and sales, and not just put it all on one or the other. And again, just to reiterate, if we're talking one leg of the stool here, which is the school, which again, that's the most significant, because that's the biggest property tax bill for most people, where it's 75 to 80% of what they pay in total property taxes. But it would not take away what you pay to the county, the municipality, and it certainly wouldn't do away with the need of trying to reform, how we do assessments in this state.
So, Eric, let's take a little bit broader look then, instead of just the focus on the property tax and what this means for the school board. The governor says that his goal is to strengthen the middle class. When we talk about property tax reductions offset by a sales tax increase and an income tax increase, in your estimation, are we helping Pennsylvania's middle class?
I guess we need to know what the middle class is specifically, but the sales tax does exempt, and I guess it would continue to, unless there's other services that are mentioned. But I think the only thing it talked about was sort of professional services. So we're still exempting food, clothing, pharmaceuticals, the personal income tax. I mean, I know there was a lot of talk going, around the budget address leading up to it, that there was going to be this proposal to start to move to a graduated income tax, where right now we have a flat or proportional rate where it's very few deductions. You pay your 3.07% whether you're making $50,000 or $500,000. So the the uniformity clause of the Constitution is kept intact. People have to sit down and start to look at the numbers. Because that's the proposal. If we're saying, well, these taxes are going up, but this one's dropping, are you going to be better off or not? That's going to be incumbent upon everybody looking at their situation and say, okay, am I an incomer? How much do I spend on taxable goods in Pennsylvania that are subject to the sales tax? And then looking at what is my school property tax bill? Am I currently getting the homestead exemption through the gaming money, and how much is that lowering my school property tax bill, and am I coming out ahead or not? Because that's essentially what comes down, to what happens with a tax shift. And immediately, you could say, well, who aren't the income earners in the state, and that's, predominantly senior citizens. they're exempted from the sales tax on, you know, on those necessities, and they're the ones that are, you know, most harmed by high property taxes. So you would think they're, you know, that would be a group that, you know, by and large is going to come out ahead.
And, you know, there's certainly a lot of math to do here, but based on what we do know, Eric, the governor says these tax reforms that he's outlined today are, in his words, smart, pragmatic, and fair. Is that safe to say? Would you agree with that, or are you still trying to figure out the formulas here? Or
well, I mean,
on
know,
the
as,
face
as
of it,
a,
is it fair?
As a policy analyst, we always kind of want to drive down to the the specifics and know exactly what it means, because you're always going to create winners and losers when you're talking about shifting taxes. It's probably not what people are expecting. I will tell you that, because again, when we hear, when we talk to people here at our organization, when we go out to make speeches, I mean, people do not like property taxes. They don't like them. But when they think or when they say, I want to be rid of, I should not have to pay property taxes on my home, their view, I mean, and again, how broad this is or how many people are involved, that means they want all property taxes gone. And they don't want to pay anything on their home, especially if they've paid off their mortgage and now they're, they've done their, their time of paying their house off, and then they're still stuck with, $1,000 or so, combined property tax bill. So they may not be happy. Is it efficient? Again, I don't know how efficient it's going to be, because then you have to get, because you have this nexus between what the two taxes levied by the state and the sales tax is very efficient, because the retailers collect it and then they turn it over to the state. The income tax filing is very efficient, because it's not one that's littered with deductions. It's basically, you put in your taxable income, you multiply it by the rate, and you submit your form to the Commonwealth, and that's your taxable, that's your what you pay in taxes.
Is this plan fair?
Fair to whom? I don't want to keep throwing out rhetorical questions, but fair to whom?
Fair
because
to
because if I'm, I know where I am in my age, and I'm an income earner, and I have to pay things, and I don't mind paying, property taxes to fund schools.
I guess the question would be: is it fair to taxpayers who own property in Pennsylvania?
It's going to be a reduction, but is it fair?
I think if we have to ask the question fair to whom, then the answer probably, at least in your mind, is that the answer is no, because there is going to be a winner somewhere and there is going to be a loser
somewhere.
Right.
I mean, that's what's going to happen with the tax shift.
Eric, we're running out of time here. I wanted to get your reaction to the proposal, the governor calling on the legislature to raise the state minimum wage to $10.10 an hour. Does that help his goal of helping the middle class, of boosting the economy?
I just look at it as, if you're proposing something where you want to pay somebody more than the value they're delivering, then somewhere it's going to be felt in the business, whether it's, people were laid off, there's reductions in production, people moved to part-time. I don't know what kind of reception that's going to get in the legislature.
John Callahan, I want to move back to you for a few moments. We only have a few seconds here, but this new tax proposal, basing it on shale, is not necessarily fixed income. Is that a concern for school boards?
I think when we're talking about taxes, we always look at a reliable tax base. I mean, first I want to say, property tax is actually a reliable tax base, so that's why we're there at the stage we're at with that one. I'll also say that school districts don't increase those taxes willy-nilly, especially school board members who have to make that vote. And we have an Act 1 provision that helps us curtail a lot of those increases. And then, so you're looking at shales. It's a little bit of a wobbly tax. That's a concern. We'll see how it goes from here, especially with the price of gas out there. So we have to be very cognizant of what kind of revenues we're actually going to expect. And that's always on our mind.
Well, I want to thank our guests for taking part in this discussion, post-budget address discussion by Governor Wolf. Tom Callahan is Senior Director of Government Affairs for the Pennsylvania School Board Association, and also Eric Montardi with the Allegheny Institute for Public Policy. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks to my co-host for this special edition of Essential Pittsburgh, Mark Neutbar. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Tomorrow on the show, Congressman Mike Doyle on the topic of net neutrality. Until then, so long for now.